I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast, presented by Superbook Sport. A little Monday edition, getting ready for the playoffs. Arif, you had a nice conversation with Seattle Kraken's reporter, Kate Shefty, formerly of the Colorado Avalanche, right? Left here last year. So just get into the conversation a little bit for everybody. Lay it up for them. Put it on a tee. Let us know what you talked about.
Yeah, Kate Shefty, formerly of the Colorado Gazette, obviously in her first full season with the Seattle Kraken, working for the Seattle Times. This is something I want to do more of this year. It's getting reporters from the cities of the teams that the Avalanche face off against if they go past the first round. And, you know, what better way to start than with Kate Shefty? I mean, she's someone that we know. She's someone that sat next to me in the press box for a season. So, we touched on a few things. Goaltending is one of them. Andrei Burakovsky's health, I'm sure everybody has seen by now that Kate tweeted out the day before the Avalanche Nashville game, or the day of, before the Avs even clinched the top spot in the Central, that Berkey was going to not be ready for the beginning of the Avalanche Seattle series. And it sounds to me like he might not even play at all. He missed the All-Star break, or missed the All-Star game. He skipped it to be healthy. And then in the first game after the All-Star break, he played, I think, 1 or 2 shifts and then was out again. So he's played pretty much one shift in the entire calendar year of 2023. So we touch on Burakovsky. We touch on the depth that you and me and Peter talked about on Sunday's show. And then just the series in general, get a quick look at what the Avalanche got to do to win this series and what Seattle has to do to upset the Central Division champs.
Of course, COVID and our lack of access to the locker rooms make this all different. But it's got to be so funny and just a peculiar situation to be in when you're covering a player in one city and doesn't matter which order, but you both end up in a completely different city and you still have that relationship to go off of, just a different setting and different scene around you. So I'm excited to kind of hear her thoughts on covering, you know, Andrei Burakovsky now in Seattle, kind of like Ryan Clark did with Jonas Donskoy, right?
Then Philip Grubauer signed there. Right. Just a lot of guys, a lot of people went from Colorado to Seattle. Obviously, unfortunately, Jonas Donskoy hasn't played all season and he's out. Burakovsky looks like he's out, and Philip Grubauer looks like the Avalanche might want to get him out of the series by getting him pulled with a lot of goals.
He's the lone guy to stand there and avenge.
And Ryan Clark's like an ESPN guy now. He's like, what's happening to our Colorado contingent?
Right on. Well, everybody enjoy Kate Shefty, and enjoy, I guess, the playoffs coming up right around the corner tomorrow. So, yeah, thanks for hanging out with us. Here's Kate Shefty.
Kate, it was, I believe, 340 something days ago. It was April 28th, 2022, was that last home game that the Avalanche had last season that you were there covering the Avalanche. I think I got on a flight to go home and visit my family before the playoffs. You shortly thereafter got on a flight, moved to Seattle to cover the Seattle Kraken. Obviously, you went right into an offseason where Seattle was like a 60 something point team. Here we are, less than a year later. Game one is on Tuesday. You are flying into Denver here today on Monday. 1 year almost to the day, and the Seattle Kraken are in the playoffs and playing the Colorado Avalanche. Did you think this would happen?
I am vibing. I cannot believe that this is happening right now. It has been a hell of a year, and what a personal full circle moment. My flight leaves in like 5 hours, and I'm just like, I can't get over this. This is so wild. I can't believe I get to see you guys again after 1 month. Last time I was in Denver was a month ago, and the teams, we kind of joked about maybe this was a possibility. And then now here we are, old team playing new team. Did not expect this. And I'm just completely delighted.
Yeah, last weekend on Sunday, April 8 or 9 or whatever that day was, that was the Anaheim game. This past Friday against Nashville in the very final game, you and I were texting as the Avalanche were taking a big lead and then blowing the big lead, and then Nathan MacKinnon obviously ending it overtime, and we were almost fans with the way we were texting because we're like, don't blow this opportunity. We got to have an Avalanche Kraken series, and here we are. Nathan MacKinnon pulled through. The Seattle Kraken almost caught the LA Kings, but just barely, kept a little bit of a divide between the two teams. We have a 1-7 matchup, the top wildcard team. And here we are. We're talking to Kate Shefty of the Seattle Times. For those of you that do remember her, she obviously did cover the Avalanche, like we mentioned in the intro, for numerous seasons, and is very much aware and very in tune with this Avalanche team. Obviously, the guys at the top, the MacKinnons, the Rantanens, the Landeskog, who is not playing, Makar, Taves, etc. But we're here to talk to you about the Seattle Kraken. We obviously had the Avalanche side covered with Peter Baugh and JJ Jerez yesterday. And today
it was okay.
It was okay. Look, we'll get some of your thoughts on the Avalanche too.
The takes were fine. They were cute. It was all right.
Which one was your favorite? Was it where we basically gave Seattle no respect and like just basically guaranteed that they were going to lose? Or was it when we said they were a small team with no physicality?
That was my favorite. And we'll name it. That was JJ. And that was a hoot. You got a text about that spicy take. And you all picked Avs in 5 or 6, and yeah. We shall see. We shall.
It's going to be a fun one, but that's basically where I want to start right off the top. Is the Seattle Kraken, the Avs played 3 times this year. In October, Seattle came here, defeated the Avs 3-2 in Burakovsky's return, the day that he got his Stanley Cup ring. In January, the Avalanche came out to Seattle. I came out there to see you guys, and the Avs won in the shootout thanks to Nathan MacKinnon. It was only 2-1, but it was on the second leg of a back-to-back. I think the one in October was the same. And then several weeks ago, Seattle came to town again and I believe won 3-2 in overtime. Mm-hmm. So 3-1 goal games from what I saw. And obviously this was something that Mikko Rantanen went out of his way today to kind of reiterate and remind us, was like, yeah, Seattle does give us issues, because Nathan MacKinnon was very clear with like, this team gives us issues. They gave us issues and we're not going to take them lightly. And Mikko Rantanen did mention that. He also said regular season head to head doesn't matter. You go into the playoffs, it's 0-0. Two of those games in the regular season, we were on the second leg of a back to back, which obviously they won one of them. They went Vancouver to Seattle. But let's start with that. This team plays the Avalanche well. What is the one thing or the several things that the Kraken can do to give the Avalanche a run and ultimately defeat the defending champs.
Well, one thing about the regular season series there, the road team won all three games. Yeah. And yesterday you guys were talking about how the Avs on the road is a huge, you know, factor in their advantage. The Kraken are also much better on the road than they have been at home. And the Kraken are going to be on the road more than the Avs in this series. So we'll see whether that comes into play. But as far as what they, as much as I hate to admit it, you guys did have some good points yesterday that this is a deep Kraken team. Their ability, they do not have a whole lot of stars. They have really, one might argue, no stars. They have a star-coded Matty Beniers. And a couple veterans, you know, Yanni Gord, Jordan Eberle, who've been around, and Jared McCann, who, you know, has kind of been, oh yeah, that guy on a lot of teams that he's played on, but in the Kraken gave him a chance to really break out, and he has certainly done so this season. But anyway, they are not a star-laden team, but they do have four lines that they can roll out, and they create matchup problems for some teams. However, that is also the bread and butter of the Avs. They may not be as deep as they were, say, last season, or even more so the season before, but they can do the same thing. And so that is one of the reasons why I imagine they match up really well together. And we will, you know, those three games were some of the, I'm obviously biased, but some of my favorite of the season, because they were very tight, very intense, very fun games just to watch. And neither team gave any quarter to the other. It was just good, tight, checking hockey.
And a lot of speed. Lot of speed on both sides. That's my favorite factor of the series, is like, if the Avalanche went up against the LA Kings, that's a smarter team, a more defensive-minded team. They have speed. They have Kempe. They have a couple guys. But Seattle matches up with the Avalanche in that speed department to make this a way more exciting series than the other alternative options.
And I guess it could have been the Stars. I thought that also would have been a very good series for the Kraken. They played the Stars pretty well, but this
had to be the one.
This was fated. No arguments.
Let's start with that. Let's start with the depth. We talked about it with Peter and JJ yesterday. The Avalanche, like you said, they've lost some players. I mean, from 2021 to 2022. They lost, I think it was Brandon Saad and Jonas Donskoy from the forward group. And we're like, wow, they're really missing a lot here. And then the very next year, they lose Burakovsky and Kadri. And now you're going into this season, they're still two lines deep. They still have bodies, but it's not the same as it was even a year ago. Your second line is looking like it's probably going to be JT Compher with Nichushkin and Lekkonen. Your third line is what's going to be the big wild card, is how well does Lars Eller fit in the playoffs. We talked about it yesterday. This is a playoff performer that is like, he was made to play in the playoffs. He ups his game every year in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But he's also older and on the last leg of his career. So can he do what Darren Helmer Cogliano did last year? You're going to have him playing with likely Newhook and Dennis Malgin on the other wing, who's been a pleasant surprise. But the Seattle Kraken have a fourth liner with 20 goals. They have guys on every line that are scoring. Daniel Sprong is who I'm referencing.
I will warn you, though, he's not 100% healthy right now. He has missed the last 2 days of practice. So
I will warn you, about 90% of the Avalanche are not healthy right now.
That's fair. Death taxes, and who are the Avs playing on the third line right now, and who is, you know, going to be back in time for the playoffs. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it is.
Things change, the more they stay the same.
Wild. Like this year, for whatever reason, they upped it from 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023's injuries for the Avalanche is unlike anything I've seen, especially how they came in waves and all at once. There was that one game in November against, you know, the Boston Bruins, 65 wins, where their top line was Alex Newhook, Mikko Rantanen, and Charles Hudon.
That's cute.
Wait, it was a great time. Charles Hudon, career AHLer journeyman that they had to call up and play on the top line.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you that I've never heard of this man, but
exactly. And that was the team, that was the top line that they had against the Boston Bruins of all team because of the injury. So
fun.
Yeah, so let's talk about that depth. Let's hone in on that because you have guys like Daniel Sprong on the third and fourth line.
Maybe.
That have scored 20 goals. Yanni Gord plays on the third line. Bjorkstrand's on the third line. I think Tanev is on the fourth line. Mm-hmm. On the Avalanche's third and fourth lines, they have some players. Like Logan O'Connor, career high. I think it was 8 goals this year.
I have Andrew a healthy, healthy respect for Logan O'Connor.
Yeah, you covered a lot of him. You covered a lot of him as well. I did. Darren Helm has been in and out of the lineup. Cogliano, 10 goals. Dennis Malgin has been fun. 12 goals in the last 28 games of the season for some reason. Like, there's no reason to explain it. Obviously, you have Lars Eller there at center, who's kind of been iffy at times with the Avalanche, but he's also a trade deadline acquisition. You expect him as a veteran and someone who's been around to up his game here in the playoffs. And then, obviously, Alex Newhook, who's had a little bit of a snake bit season, ends the year with 30 points. What can the Seattle Kraken's bottom six do? Because that's the difference to me, is Seattle has goal scorers on every line.
That the Kraken's third line is very unlike the forever in flux Avs third line, it seems, is very solidified at this point. I was looking at the numbers earlier. They've been together a while now, and Oliver Bjorkstrand led the Columbus Blue Jackets in goals, I believe, the last three seasons. He is not who they expected to be. They were expecting a top line winger out of him. He has struggled to consistently put the puck in the net, which has been his bread and butter to his whole career up to this point. All season in Seattle, this isn't the role they envisioned for him, but it has worked out. You know, it's everything's kind of fallen into place. It's fine, and he has developed some very good chemistry with Yanni Gord, who does it all. He's a pest. He's a good shutdown veteran, like everything, like he's heart and soul guy, alternate captain. He's everything he would be the captain if they weren't saving it for Matty Beniers. Yeah. So they probably, I don't know, no disrespect, Jordan Eberle, but that's what I suspect. Yeah. So that's my take. But and then on the other side, Eli Tolvanen, who was a waiver pickup from the Nashville Predators. That line, and he has rediscovered his scoring touch and become, you know, very effective and deadly for them as well. So that line has been playing together for quite a while now. They are very good at what they do. They are a good shutdown line. They will probably be matched against some McKinnon Rantanen situation. If, like Peter said, they split the two of them up, then they have a fourth line centered. That one's been a bit of a rotating cast of characters, Ryan Donato and Brandon Tanev, and then TBD on Daniel Sprong. But Daniel Sprong has made that fourth line very dangerous all season. He got he was in and out of the lineup for a little while there. Questions have followed him throughout his career as to his two-way abilities. He's a goal scorer. Like, that's what he does. He's got a heck of a shot, and he has put it to good use, and he's been hot, and he's made it so that they cannot take him out of the lineup. Bad shifts be damned. So the fourth line is, you know, can score, can and will score on you. And Tanev has put up some career best numbers as well. The Kraken are just deep. You can't just shut down their top line and call it a day. They will cost you a few goals here and there. And they are good about if one line quiets down. Matty Beniers has had some quiet scoring stretches. He is a rookie, and that happens. And other lines have really kind of picked up the pace, and they're good about a different line doing it every night, which, you know, is another thing the Avs are really good at.
Yeah. So I want to actually touch on a couple of things, because while you were talking about Bjorkstrand, I looked up his stats. While you were talking about Sprong, I looked up his stats.
And dang, efficiency.
So this is what you're talking about with this team just being so deep from the very top of the lineup down is there any stars? No, like nothing really sticks out. Obviously, Maddie Beniers is a future star in the making. You know, a proud Michigan Wolverine alum. Go Blue. Always got to throw that in. Yeah. But like Jared McCann led the team in goals, 40 goals, 30 assists, 70 points. And that is an unbelievable season for Jared McCann's standards. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a Nathan MacKinnon putting up 70 points and questioning why did MacKinnon only have 70 points. So they don't really have that big star name. But mm-hmm. you look lower in the lineup. You were talking about, you know, Bjorkstrand isn't reaching the numbers and the role that they expected, which I agree with. And then you look at Bjorkstrand's numbers, 20 goals, 25 assists in 81 games. They expected more than that, but he still gave you 45 points. Mm-hmm. Daniel Sprong, fourth liner, 66 games. He plays 11 minutes and 25 seconds a game, 21 goals, 25 assists, 46 points. Like just crazy numbers. Yanni Gord, 48 points.
Oh, Yanni, my God.
I keep saying his name wrong. Sorry.
It's Yanni. Yanni Gord.
Yanni Gord, 48 points. Alex yes. Wenberg, 38 points. Brandon Tanev, 35. On defense, you have Schultz and Larson at 34 and 33. I purposely skipped over the guy at the top and Vince Dunn because we're going to talk about him in a second. Mm-hmm. Andre Burakovsky, somebody else that we'll mention here briefly, 39 points in 49 games, an old friend for the Avalanche here. Morgan Geekie, 28 points. Eli Tolvanen, like you said, 27. Ryan Donato, 27. These are big numbers. Every single person I just listed had more points than Logan O'Connor. Mm-hmm. And that's a good player on the Avalanche, you know. If 33 and 34 and 28 and 25 and all these numbers don't seem like a lot, Alex Newhook had 30, and that's a guy that's, you know, comfortably in your top nine. And I'm mentioning guys on the bottom line for the Kraken that had more points than that. So it's really crazy to see their depth. I think the only other player, and that's where I'll transition to the blue liner, the only other player other than Maddie Beniers that I could see turning into a star. And like Peter said, which I do agree with, not on my ballot, but I do agree Vince Dunn will be getting some love for the Norris Trophy. How did this guy take off this year? Obviously, you can't compare him to last year. This is your first year in Seattle. But what has Vince Dunn brought to this team for the Kraken?
You know, first of all, do you agree with my assessment from 10 tangents ago where I said Jared McCann was kind of, you know, in Pittsburgh, you know, he was kind of like, oh, yeah.
That guy.
McCann, that guy,
Vancouver, that's, Florida.
He Dunn, I would say, by his own admission, was kind of even a step below that. He was on, you know, kind of a 5-6D type role in St. Louis, and he was a bit player on there. Yeah, there are no bit players, as the commercials like to tell us, but he was not certainly not a star on in St. Louis's Cup run, but he got quite the opportunity in Seattle, and he credits Brandon Tanev for taking him to, like, insisting that he join him in his off-season training in Toronto. And that kind of really put him in a new headspace, kind of really made him start thinking about what he wanted, you know, what he wanted to do, what he wanted to accomplish. And he has been on the top defensive pairing with Adam Larson since last season, last March. And they work very well together. They know each other very well at this point. They have not spent a game apart. There's a stray shift every once in a while, but they have been started every game paired together for more than a year. And Larson and him really complement each other. They communicate very well. And Larson really kind of holds it down while Dunn gets to kind of be the offensive minded guy that he is and gives him the freedom to do what he does. And especially in the second half of the season, He set a record point streak for the Kraken and then later broke it. He has been wild. Extremely confident. They give him a lot of responsibilities. He's obviously a top guy on the power play. Dunn and Larson play very big minutes. You could see the change, you know, like from 5-6D who is, you know, playing good, you know, above himself, good job guy, to like actual top dude. And that is, it's been, you know, it's kind of cool seeing all, you know, seeing the national media kind of start to take notice and start surrounding him. And it's like he manifested it, you know, like last summer he was like, I'm gonna change things up and I'm gonna be that guy, and he's that guy.
Yeah, Vince Dunn is most famously known for the guy they took ahead of Tarasenko. What were they thinking? And this is exactly what they were thinking. He's a hell of a player, and he's been so great. It kind of reminds me of like Nate Schmidt in Washington when Vegas took him and he just took off. Obviously, he hasn't reached that next level. Or even Shea Theodore, who they took from Anaheim. There's always that blue liner that you could find on a team that's toiling on like a second or third pair that just needs an opportunity to kind of manifest, like you were saying, that next step. Obviously you had tweeted out on Friday before the game against the Avalanche had against Nashville that Andrei Burakovsky was going to be out and is going to miss the start of the series. What is your kind of prediction on that? Is that something that you think like he's just not going to play? It doesn't seem like he's close to a return. I know he's been out. He only had like that one game for a couple shifts or whatever since the All-Star break after missing the All-Star game to heal, which didn't happen. What's going on with Berkey? Do you think we'll see him in the series?
Well, my colleague, Jeff Baker, talked to Ron Francis, who said that he underwent surgery for a lower body injury last Tuesday and is expected to need roughly 6 weeks for his recovery, which will certainly put him out of the first.
So there will be no Andrei Burakovsky. Giannis Donskoy obviously has not played all season. That's the other familiar name here, which brings me to the third name, which I am very curious of your thoughts because I have not done a lot of research on him this year. I've not watched a lot of him, but Philip Grubauer has started 36 games, 17-4-4. Obviously his backup Martin Jones took over for a big portion of the season when Grubauer was injured. And then even when he came back,
but injured in Colorado.
Yeah, that's true. But Gruby's 36 games, 17-4-4, 895 save percentage, zero shutouts. Is this the team defense? Is the goaltending not up to it? What's going on with Gruby and his numbers? Because that's the big question for me is if the Avalanche start to pile on the goals like they did last year against Connor Ingram and David Riddick and both Martin Jones and Grubauer have their hands up, like what do we do? Then it's going to be a quick series, but we know Gruby has more in him. We've seen it. What's going on with him?
That's kind of what I quietly say to myself whenever I hear the argument that the only reason that Grubauer was any good was because he was behind that vaunted Colorado defense. And he was on that, you know, a Colorado team that was building towards becoming Stanley Cup champion. And he, you know, without those pieces in front of him, he can't hang. And I'm like, I've seen him hang. I've seen him play very well. So have you. And it independently of, you know, he stole games in Colorado on a regular basis. That has not really happened that much in Seattle. And it's not just Grubauer. Jones's numbers are not a whole lot better. Goaltending, as I keep phrasing it, was not the story of the season in Seattle. There was a time in November where they were certainly outscoring their problems and they were just allowing way too much. They're being way too loose on defense and just kind of hanging them out to dry, and both Jones and Grubauer. And there was certainly a time where the question was raised in Seattle, can this team play well in front of Grubauer? Because Grubauer's record was deceptively bad for like really even going into the All-Star break. They weren't giving him any goal support. It seemed like every time Grubauer was put in net, the team would just lay an egg. It was really very strange. And so everyone was like, well, do they just not trust Grubauer? But then we come out of the All-Star break and Jones was still the guy. He was starting most of the games, but then he kind of started to falter and Grubauer came in and he has started more than twice as many games since the All-Star break as Jones. And he has played quite well. He's had a couple hiccups. It's kind of a bit of a question mark which version we will see, whether it's the, you know, giving up some untimely bad goals and that kind of shoots the team's confidence, like, you know, that Vegas series that in 2021. There we go. Thank you. You know, we were there. And or is he the one that goes out and stands on his head, because he's fully capable of it. It can definitely happen. And this is his time. This is the time, like you would think he would rise to this challenge, and he gets another chance at the playoffs. That was the last time he appeared in the playoffs. And it is t- time will only tell, you know, which version of Grubauer that we see next week. But we have seen him at, you know, seen him turn it out, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, the big thing for Grubauer for me is because of the COVID shortened seasons in 2020 and in 2021, he didn't start 40 games in either season. So when Seattle signed him, they signed a guy similar to what the Avalanche got when they got Grubauer. Now even Georgiev, actually, it's a good example as well. This isn't a guy that has started 50, 60 games before, but you know, when he did last year in 2022, he started 54 games and he had an 889 save percentage. He's bumped it up to an 895 now. Like 895 is better than he was a year ago, which tells you how much worse he was a season ago when the Kraken were a lottery team. But a 26-year-old Philip Grubauer, for example, played 35 games, only won 15 of them, but had a 923. A 25-year-old Philip Grubauer played 24 games, only won 13 of them, but had a 926. So this year, he played 36. He only won 17 of them, but he's got an 895. So like you said, like this is something we've seen. I listed off ages and seasons of him with the Capitals. I skipped over the Avalanche bunch where he was a 917, a 916, and a 922. So there's something there for him. I think the biggest thing for me is there is a little bit of a real human element to it to say, like, this guy wants to play the Avalanche. It would be really nice for him to get a victory over them, to stick it to that team. Not that they, you know, did him wrong. Ron Francis offered him a whole bunch of money. He saluted the Avalanche and said, see you later. Like, obviously I'm going to go, just like Darcy Kemper did. Mm-hmm. But it's a curious case with him. I hadn't done a lot of research on him, but I've heard a lot of his numbers. Obviously the Seattle goaltending I'd listen to, as you know, I'm a hockey nerd and I listen to a lot of radio shows and a lot of podcasts. And it was always when they talk about the Kraken, it was always their goaltending. Neither guy is above 900. And usually Martin Jones was the guy with the better numbers. But now looking at it, Grubauer has better numbers than Jones. He's got a 895. Jones is down to an 887, which is pretty damn impressive for someone who's 27, 13, and 3, which again speaks to the depth of the Kraken and them outscoring their problems, especially early in the season when they were scoring a shitload of goals. Was there a 9-goal game at one point? Was it against LA?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that the Phoenix? Not nine, Phoenix Cup, the other guy, Cal Peterson.
9-8 overtime. Well, LA switched goalies. Jones was in there the whole thing. And our buddy Andrei Burakovsky scored, mercy killed that game in overtime. And it was one of the wildest experiences I have ever witnessed in person.
I think we haven't seen Cal Peterson in the NHL since. Well, that was when he got sent down.
That was, you know, that'll break a man, I believe. Yeah.
He can cry into his $5 million paycheck. It's okay.
I'd also like to point out that you have zero problem with Georgiev, but Yanni is a problem. How?
Because Yanni didn't play in Denver.
Oh, okay.
Yanni Gord. And the Avalanche didn't play him when he was with Tampa Bay. Yeah, but he was with Tampa Bay.
Put some respect on his pronunciation, man.
I loved, by the way, when you were talking about him being like such a glue guy on the third line. I'm like, yeah, I've heard this before. Yanni and a third line doing good things. I didn't know he did that. Yeah. But yeah, that about wraps up the guys that I wanted to cover. We kind of touched on Jared McCann. It's cool to see him scoring 40 goals. That's a guy that, for a 26-year-old to have already played 8 years in the NHL, seems like he should be 34 at this point, because he's been around for forever, drafted by Vancouver, was part of that trade to Florida, then went to Pittsburgh, and then came to Seattle, obviously, via Toronto in the expansion draft. Just a wild, wild, wild turn of events for where does that guy play now? Oh, it's Seattle. So
it's just an absolutely unreal shooting percentage. Everyone keeps thinking 19%. It's gonna eat out. Yeah, yeah, everyone keeps thinking all season. I heard that can't last. It did.
It really did. I mean, hey, he shot 13.6 last year, 15.1 the year before. So like, what is it going to do? Drop from 40 goals to 34?
I know.
33? Like that's not a bad thing. And this is a guy that for the first time in his career put up more than 200 shots. He'd never done that before. So,
well, he's got some mad chemistry with his line mates. Another kind of fairly solid Kraken line that you will see. Jordan Eberle, who could manufacture chemistry with like a tree if he wanted to. And then Matty Beniers, 20-year-old rookie. Where'd he go to school again? I forget.
University of Michigan.
Yeah. And those 2 years in Michigan did him good. He, kept the scoring pace. Not he had a debut with the Kraken. He got 10 games in last at the end of last season after Michigan was eliminated from the NCAA tournament. And he has been, he was supposed to be their all-star, but was injured a couple games before and did not go. And they, so the Kraken actually did not have an all-star, but he really, he did play like it. He has grown a lot, and he's not just, you know, an offensive guy. He kills penalties. He is like, they trust him a lot, and he has been very good. And he's had his moments. The second half of the season, he slowed a little bit, but at least offensively, but he was doing everything else really well. It's not like he was slacking. It wasn't like Matty Beniers, what, total bust, you know, like no one was writing that. He was just, he went through some rookie stuff. It happens. Yeah. Get it out of their system. They move on.
And he still ended with 24 goals, 33 assists, 57 points. Those are very, very good numbers for a 20-year-old and someone who's gonna, he's gonna take off. He's gonna be the star for this team. They still have Shane Wright in the system. They've got a lot of guys coming, but this is the number one guy at the top of the list is Matty Beniers. This is gonna be some kind of rude awakening for him to play the Avalanche, Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, you know, Cale Makar 7-game series. It's gonna be a lot of fun for him, but it's gonna be a big learning curve. And you know, even in a losing effort, we saw Nathan MacKinnon in 2014 in his first playoff appearance put up 10 points in 7 games in a losing effort. It was still a learning curve for him, but he still got a lot out of it. And I could very easily see Matty Beniers do something like that because of the player he is. I will end by saying this on Matty Beniers, and then we'll wrap up the show here. My award ballot is due before puck drop. Well, all the award ballots are due before puck drop of the first game tonight. 7 p.m. Eastern time. I forget who starts the playoffs. One of the Eastern Conference teams. It's not Toronto, Tampa. It's one of the other series. But the award ballot is due before that first puck drop for the NHL awards this year. And I have Matty Beniers on 2 of my ballots, not just the Calder Trophy. So stay tuned to learn more about that.
I have not even started mine, so there.
Love that for you. I started last night or 2 nights ago, and I've just been putting a lot of things together. I just have to read over it one more time, make sure I'm not stupid or put the wrong guy in.
Congratulations, A-plus student, Michigan, University of Michigan.
Yeah, that's where Matty Beniers learned his craft. The crazy thing about the NHL award ballot, the most like the high pressured part of it, because this is my second year getting a ballot in for the NHL awards. And if you're wrong on the ballot, they don't count it. And then you get called out in an email that gets sent out to all the professional, no pressure, Kate, that gets sent out to all the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Like, you know, we sent out, let's say 200 ballots. We got back 194 of them. So 6 people did not. Here are the 6 names that didn't turn it in time. And here are the 2 people that made a mistake. So we're not going to count it. Okay. So they'll put it all, like they'll list it all out. So last year in my old rookie team, who was the big rookie defenseman last year? Why is it not coming to me?
I can't even remember what year anything happened.
Detroit, Moritz Seider.
Yeah.
So I had Detroit's Moritz Seider as a defenseman on the all rookie team. And then the second spot was blank. And I considered Bowen Byram, but I just couldn't do it because he didn't play a lot of games. And then I landed on Alexander Carrier from the Nashville Predators. He had a decent season. He played a lot of minutes with like Dante Fabro at times with Roman Josi. He had a pretty good year last year. I don't even know what his numbers look like this year. I haven't checked, but he had a pretty good rookie season. And I put him on there and I submitted it. And then for the next 4 days, I had to sit there and think to myself, was Carrier a rookie or did I just make that up in my brain? And then I had to Google it and I realized he was. So double check your work, triple check your work. It is a very stressful thing to put in a ballot and I don't know, put the wrong person in the wrong spot. There's also they're just where you play and where you put positions. Like Ryan Nugent Hopkins is a left winger. If you're going to put him on your all-star team, he's not a center. So just some crazy things like that. But any closing thoughts from you, Kate, as we prepare for game one tomorrow night, Ball Arena? It's going to be so much fun.
First of all, you fill out my ballot. Second, what is the status on Cale Makar? I keep reading different things. Tell me the truth, Eric. I'm holding you to it.
He looked fine when he skated today. Okay, it sounded, when Jared talked, it sounded like he will for sure play. And then when Chris McFarland talked today, he said, we hope. And like Josh Manson has already talked to me to hear it. He said, I'm going to be back for game one. And then Chris McFarland went out of his way today to say, yeah, we hope Manson and McCarr are ready for game one. But he said it in a positive way that kind of made it sound like they're going to play. Basically, where we're at with the Avalanche is just remove that giant hole of number 92, who's not going to play this year, obviously, unfortunately for Landeskog. Everybody else is healthy. The only person who likely won't play game one or two or won't be healthy is Darren Helm. But Chris McFarland said, you know, he went out of his way to even say it this way. He said, you know, Darren Helm's working his way back from injury. Will we see him in game one or game two? That's a question, but he will play in the series. So it sounds like everybody's ready to go except for Darren Helm, because obviously we're going to put Landeskog aside. By the time Darren Helm is ready, I'm sure there will be four injuries before game three. So we'll see how it goes, because that's just the luck of the Avalanche. And then on defense, this is the last thing I'll mention is, and if you heard yesterday's episode, it was the same thing. The top five defense on this team, Jared calls them his horses on the blue line. The Makar Taves, the Byron Manson, the Sam Girard have not all played in the same game since November 4th. And this is a season that started on October 14th. It was the ninth game of the regular season for the Avalanche. It has been 73 games since all five of those guys have played in the same game. And with a healthy Cale Makar and Josh Manson, all five of them are healthy. So is Eric Johnson. So is Jack Johnson. So for the first time since the ninth game of the year, the Avs are going to have their actual defense all ready to go.
Is that like a Horses of the Apocalypse reference?
He's just my horses on the blue line, as in the guys that played 20-something minutes. And then it's basically to say Eric Johnson's old and the number six. Everybody else is a horse is ultimately. Oh, Eric Johnson owns the horses. Everybody else is a horse is ultimately the way that I got it.
Now that I say it out loud, I think it's the Horsemen of the Apocalypse. So that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But my last thought is you're going to hear me rolling up to Avs Press Row in a couple days singing, "So what did I miss? What did I miss? Colorado, my home sweet home, I want to give you a kiss."
Take it, Aerith.
I can't even pretend
to know the words perfectly Hamilton. Enough to sing it. No, I know what you were singing. Okay. I was just going to.
I'm so proud of you for knowing a play.
I'm cultured.
Yeah, you are.
You didn't miss much. Just a Stanley Cup and a bunch of things like that. Nothing crazy. We don't even have to talk about it.
Evan Rodriguez.
Evan Rodriguez is here now. Yeah, just it's a whole thing. We don't even got to get into it, but we'll wrap the show here. Kate, we're so happy to have you in Denver, probably for two games, maybe for a third game if it's not a sweep in either direction, which would be hilarious if like Seattle swept Colorado. I just couldn't fathom the idea of what would happen if that happened. But we'll close it here. Game one, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock p.m. at Ball Arena. Game two on Thursday, games three and four, Saturday and Monday in Seattle. I can't wait for that trip to go back to that very rainy place that you live in now.
I love it.
But we'll close it out here. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. This is the JJ line. If you made it in the podcast, made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart.
There he goes.
Let's make hockey for everyone. And we out, Joe.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.